Welcome back to the life of Leonardo da motherfucking Vinci, Renaissance episode 163. How are you doing today, Ray Donkey Harris?
I'm doing well. If I could just quick 20 seconds. Kids, take a knee. Time for Uncle Ray. I know you don't believe the 100 or 99.9% of people that say global warming is real, but it is mid to late February in Virginia, and it was 81 degrees today. I've got on shorts, sandals, and a t-shirt. There should be snow on the fucking ground. Now, Saturday, a snowstorm is coming, and then Sunday and Monday, it's going to be back up in the 60s. So winter is officially over in Virginia, and it's not even March. So global warming, that shit is real. So please factor that into your lives. Okay, I'm done. That was my little soapbox. But it's kind of weird to literally go from snowstorms to go winter lasted for almost 2.5 months. I know for you, this is normal weather, but it is very – a lot of us are going, this is fucking weird that we're walking around in shorts and sandals in February. This just does not happen here. I'm done.
I noticed you had the sweaty pits going on. Oh, yeah, that was me. Yeah. Isn't it supposed to be cold there? I just thought you had the heating cranked up.
This is literally the time when kids are out of school because there's too much snow, and we get the sleds out, and we go down the hill, and we try to kill each other because that's what's fun. But no, Kiki took her friends to the creek today to go stick their feet in the water because it was so warm. That is global warming, ladies and gentlemen. It's cute because they're cute girls, but that's not the point. This is real. I'm done now. I'm done preaching.
Sure, that's what she was doing at the creek. Speaking of Virginia, I want you to reach out to your friends at the Virginia Christian Alliance.
Let me write this down. Uh-huh. Christian Alliance. Oh, Paul. Okay. Yeah. What do you mean tell them?
Because they did a blog post the other day where they were using my book, The Psychopath Epidemic,
right,
to make some point about the end times coming and to push their bizarre eschatological theology. And I was like, really? Look, I'm happy for any mention of my book.
I appreciate the press.
Yeah, but from the Virginia Christian Alliance, it was a little bit weird.
Well, how do you know that you're not being used by God and that you are one of the many little messengers that we don't listen to in the world ends? Who's to say? Who's to say?
Well, I've always assumed that I am the Messiah.
I'm just
or the Kwisatz Haderach, actually.
Right. Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah. So I guess we'll find out eventually. Either the world will burn up or end times will come thanks to your book. We'll just wait and see. I'm just going to get some popcorn and wait it out.
My goal since I was about 15 is to one day end up as a worm, a sandworm.
Right.
Like Paul Muad'Dib Atreides did in God Emperor Dune, or Dune Messiah, and thinking God Emperor Dune, just cover myself in the young worms, these fishy things that you cover your body in, and then they transform into a giant sandworm, and combining that with my enormous powers from drinking the spice, I should be able to rule the universe. So that's still kind of the plan I'm working towards.
Ladies and gentlemen, is it just me or is anybody
it's
else
not fat.
Got turned on?
This isn't
right.
This isn't fat. This is sandworm.
Powers. Oh.
I'm transforming.
Gotcha.
Slowly into a sandworm. Walk without rhythm.
How's it karate? No. Jiu-jitsu. Whatever. Wing Chun. How's that going?
Yeah, it's great. Although I'm sore all over today, fucking so sore from yesterday. We did like an hour of kicking yesterday, and I pulled something in my groin.
Yeah, no, put it back.
It was good.
Good.
It's great. So much great fun.
Good.
Kung Fu was so much fun to learn. Yeah,
It's nice to have an occasional non-edible, pleasurable experience.
The fun thing is Chrissy and I do it together, and so we train together at the Kwoon at the school.
Right.
You know, yesterday I was wearing this huge thing called a body belt, which is like a weight belt, but it's about that big, and it's got
covers,
padding on it.
Yeah.
So she was kicking me like full on side kicks, round kicks, front kicks into my midsection while I'm wearing this belt. And I did the same to her. Like, there's no better way to get out any frustrations in a marriage to go along to kung fu and get to kick and punch the shit out of each other legally.
There, exactly.
Nothing the cops can do about it.
No.
You've got pads and you've got, you know, you're punching the shit out of your spouse.
Your master or whatever.
For the marriage.
That is great marriage advice. Side note, if you two are ever walking down the street and a motorcycle gang, because this happens all the time, jumps you, promise me that you'll say, hold on, guys, just one moment. Let me set my phone up here. I'm going to put it on record because Ray is going to want to see this. And then you kick the shit out of everybody. Just billion hits on YouTube. Anyway, but just try to arrange that if you could. Mm. I'm done now.
It'll be Chrissy kicking the shit out of him.
And you filming.
Yeah. Yeah. You got this one, honey. Yeah.
I'll get the next game. No, you go.
Yeah.
And don't hold back. Don't hold back like last time. All right. Yeah. Love it.
Seriously. Like it's been fun for me to watch her progress over the last couple of years we've been doing it.
Right.
Because when we started, like she had no, I had some martial arts experience, but she had no martial arts experience, no boxing, no anything.
Right.
But she's always been fit and gone to the gym and done that kind of stuff.
Good
but.
For her.
She was a klutz. She didn't even know how to make a fist. She didn't know how to throw a kick. I used to say she looked like a baby foal learning how to stand. Like it was all just knees and elbows.
Akimbo. Yeah.
Which is a great martial art.
Go ahead.
Now,
yes.
She's a complete fucking badass. Like she can throw an elbow like nobody's business. She comes up and I've got the pads.
Right.
And she'll be like throwing elbows and punches and kicks, like a flurry of elbows,
memory.
Kicks and fists.
She's kicking ass.
And she's bony. You know, she's skinny and bony and she's muscly too now. She's
sinewy.
Like, bam,
there
bam.
You go.
Sinewy,
yes. But
she's fucking deadly now. Yeah. It's been like, I'm really proud of her. I'm like, holy shit, you kick ass.
Absolutely. Because actually, you just answered my question because the next thing I was going to ask was, has her level of confidence gone up? In the transformation in her body that she can handle herself. She's got more coordination now. I just imagine that would transfer as well. And she, you know, I've seen that happen and things like that. I was just wondering. So
very, it's great. You know, cool. It's great. And you know, we do it mostly for, you know, health and exercise and fitness, of course, but
yeah. But hey, kick a spouse. It's always a good time. Let's get on with the show.
Speaking of, having sex with young boys. When Leonardo was in Milan in 1507.
Yes.
He met a young 14-year-old boy called Francesco Melzi, who was to become one of his closest companions for the rest of his life. Now, this young boy was the son of a nobleman who was a bit of a big deal in Milan. He was the captain in the Milanese militia and a civil engineer who reinforced the city's fortifications.
Oh.
The Melzis lived in the largest villa in the town of Vaprio, which was situated on a river overlooking Milan. And Leonardo often stayed there. It was sort of like his second home. He's 55. Has no son or heir of his own.
Yeah.
He has Sally, but this boy is like, Sally's getting on a bit now.
Yeah, he's 27.
This boy is the new Sally, even though Sally is still around.
Right.
He's an aspiring artist. He's pretty, like Sally was.
Mm-hmm.
And with his father's permission.
Ooh.
Francesco Melzi is officially adopted by Leonardo da Vinci.
I have to ask, this is not Leo trading out an older anus for a younger anus. Sly's still there. He's probably still temperamental. He's still someone who's very superficial, and he knows he's pretty, and he looks good in whatever clothes that Leo buys him. So this is not just, you know, I'm changing for a younger model, which is I tried to tell Heather, and that didn't go over very well. But I think he genuinely cared for this boy, and like you said, he was a good friend of the family. And I seriously doubt if Francesco's father, who is all those things that you said he would, said, no, please have my son. I want you to bugger him all you possibly can. I think this was a more complex relationship, not sexual, but it's a wonderful opportunity because, as you were saying a second ago, Leonardo, he doesn't really have anybody in his life except for Sly, and half of the time, Sly is a pain in the ass and not in a good way. So he's got a companion now. That's a pretty good move for him.
Yeah, and it's a really interesting situation. Mm-hmm. Like, on one hand, this is probably a great honor for the Melzi family. Good point. Leonardo, not only the most celebrated artist of the day, but as we mentioned in the last episode, now the official painter and engineer of the King of France.
Business card. Yeah. It's a big deal.
Which is drawn on his dick, but still, they hadn't invented business cards back then. Just with
business penis.
You go to a drinks thing and you'd have to flop your dick out to tell people who you were.
I still do. Never mind. You don't want to know that story.
Yeah. Well, you're old school like that. the old ways are the best ways.
They really are.
It's an honor.
Yes.
Him taking this boy in to his home, being his guardian, mm-hmm. teacher, adoptive father, and employer.
Yeah.
And we have to assume maybe also lover, and if not lover, then, you know, just stand there naked in the room for me while I draw you as life studies.
With one hand. While I... Yeah. But he's 55 now. Sorry, go ahead, yeah.
Walter Isaacson says he thinks it's unlikely that Melzi had a sexual relationship with Leonardo because he said his father wouldn't have...
Right, that's what I was...
You know, given him over to that kind of... Like, Sally, as far as we know, was sort of a bit of an itinerant kid. But Melzi obviously comes from a very well-to-do and
connected.
Noble family.
Yes.
Here's my problem with that.
Right.
Leonardo had lived in Milan for 20 years with Salai mm-hmm. by his side
mm-hmm. under
for
him.
Most of that.
Right.
Under him. and whilst we have no record of Leonardo getting into any trouble for homosexuality in Milan,
mm-hmm.
and it being a Catholic city like Florence, mm-hmm. homosexuality would have been verboten, and there would have been, you know, huge penalties for it.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no record of Leonardo getting in trouble, but it seems like he was pretty out about his relationship with Sally.
Yeah.
He's living with him. He's buying him clothes. He's taking him everywhere.
Sure, they have fights in restaurants. Yeah. Lovers.
I'm sure it was no secret... Right. At least amongst the court of Ludovico Sforza, in the elite, the circles that Leonardo ran with when he was in Milan, that he was gay.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous.
I mean, there's never any suggestion that he's seen with a woman, that he's dating a woman, that he's banging women.
Right.
None of that. So people, they're not dumb. They're going to go, everyone knew Leonardo was gay. They must have.
Yes.
He never gets into trouble for it, so they must be turning a blind eye to it.
Tolerance, yeah.
Must have been okay by Ludovico Sforza. Look, you know, love is love. Ludovico Sforza used to say, what happens in the privacy of your own bedroom, as long as it's been in either between consensual adults or an adult and a boy toy.
Right.
It's fine. It's fine. Yeah. It's none of my business.
Yeah.
Let God judge you in the afterlife. It's got nothing to do with me.
Exactly.
I'm not Savonarola. Like, I'm a live and let live kind of guy. Yes,
I
probably tortured and killed my nephew and anyone, but that's a power thing.
That's
a price of doing business.
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I'm an evil cunt, but even I don't get – I try and tell you what you can and can't do in
I'm
your bedroom.
I'm not moralistic.
Like, even I draw the line there somewhere.
Yeah.
And we have to assume that – the king, the French king, and Charles d'Amboise, the king's governor of Milan,
knew
about Leonardo's reputation.
He would be investigated.
The king's just made him his official painter and engineer.
Yeah.
At some point in that process, somebody who'd known Leonardo in Milan for 20 odd years would be going,
Sire.
You know, the guy's he's a
fegula.
He's a bit of a.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to remember what are the. What's the Italian American name for it? Tony Soprano.
Oh, God. Now we have to watch the entire series to get that word. So we're going to be right back. We're going to go watch it.
Anyway.
I gotta look that up. Yeah. But so here's the question. If the king knows and Charles, the mayor knows, there's a good chance Melty's father knows. And so is he going to – was there a contract? We don't know if there was a contract or was it an informal understanding. Fanuc. What is it?
A Fanuc. A Fanuc.
There we go. Oh, yeah,
Stugatz is your dick.
Yeah.
A Fanuc.
Fanuc.
Hey, the guy. Yeah. I saw
he's a Fanuc lover. Right.
I saw a clip of Gandolfini on SNL doing what's their news thing in SNL?
Oh, just I'm looking right at it.
Yeah, whatever they call it.
Yes,
yeah.
The news show.
It was with Tina Fey and Amy Poehler when Gandolfini came on, and he was in character as Tony, and he was talking about, I think the governor of New Jersey had just resigned because it came out that he had, you know, male prostitutes or a male lover or something.
You can't do that.
And again, if it was like, hey, so the guy's a Fanuc. Yeah, it's got nothing to do with me. Anyway, so my point here is that everyone knew that Leonardo was a Fanuc, but they didn't, it didn't seem to matter. But like, if you're sending your 14-year-old son.
Yes, who's pretty.
To live with a known homosexual.
You're giving him away to this guy. Yeah.
Are you going to spell like people are going to assume? Yes, people are going to assume
exactly
that there's something going on. So, like, he did it. He was obviously okay with it. The father,
right?
He's going to spend the rest of his life going, listen, Leonardo swears that he's not touching him up or looking at his thing or whatever. Right. Like, There's something going on here. That my bullshit filter's going off here. There's something that doesn't make sense about this.
I know they showered together to save on money. That's just good conservation. Because later on, some guy named Ray is going to talk about global warming. But the point is,
Leonardo was going, listen, the soap is expensive. So look, you lather up my body, and then just rub your body up against mine.
Right,
and that's the best way. Hey, I'm a fucking scientist. I understand the best way to get clean. Is to rub your body up against mine. It's scientifically proven. I studied this. I've got notebooks.
I can show them to you right now. Yeah. The best way to get clean is to get a little dirty. You know what I'm saying? All right. So here's my question. Do we know anything about the young 14-year-old boy? Do we know, is he gay? Was there any indication that he was gay? Is there any proclivities in that direction? Because
After Leonardo died, Melty got married to a prominent noblewoman and had 8 kids.
Okay. So either nothing happened or he was of a different persuasion when he was younger or whatever. But I'm trying to picture a father. Yes, you can go work with this guy. This is a wonderful opportunity. He's the greatest artist of our times. And I'm willing to accept that he might be shtupped occasionally. I don't know. I just have a mental block as a parent. Who knows? But then again, you know, it was hundreds of years ago. Who knows what really happened, if anything, between these two? It's a conundrum.
Anyway, it is.
Yes, it is.
Maybe it was all looky-looky, no touchy-touchy. Maybe that was the deal. I don't know. Anyway, we know that Salai was still in the picture.
Yes, he's 27 years old.
Yes, he is. And one of Leonardo's letters, too old for Leonardo DiCaprio, let's just put it out there. He's over the 25 limit.
25 magic mark.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
One of Leonardo's letters to Melty in 1508, he mentions that he is sending the message via Salai.
Right.
Salai's taking the message to Melty. So we know that both of them stayed by Leonardo's side for the next 10 years. We know that Melty earned a higher salary than Salai did.
Yeah.
The Salieri is what they used to call it. There's a note, but there's also tension with Salai. There's a note from 1508 in one of his notebooks. Salai, I want peace, not war. No more wars. I give in.
Oh my God.
So
is it lovers? A lover spat.
Yeah, I mean, it may be related to Melty. It may not. We know that he and Salai always had tension and troubles.
Right.
There was, you know, it was a very friction filled relationship. We know Salai was mischievous and would steal money and steal stuff, and he was always trash causing him trouble.
Yeah.
Trash, rich people's places.
Exactly.
But so it's really hard to know what's going on here. But Meltzy offered him something that Salai didn't. Meltzy seems was reliable. I mean, he's only 14 when Leonardo hooks up with him, but he's sensible. He's not as mischievous as Salai is. He's reliable. Yeah. And it's somebody that Leonardo can pass on his knowledge, his wisdom to, his training, and when he passes away, his papers and his estate and all of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
By then, both of his parents are dead. He's estranged from his half-siblings. Yeah. He had Salai, but Salai is devious and not very reliable. So now he has Meltzy as a reliable life partner, maybe non-sexual.
Right. Well, I imagine that before Meltzy left his father's house, he probably said to his son, look, this is Leonardo. This is a wonderful opportunity for you. Take it seriously. Work diligently. And as far as we know, he did. He organized Leo's papers. He did correspondence for him. He organized things. He was taught how to paint by Leonardo. And like you said, he's going to go on and do some of his own painting eventually. And because of this young man, we have a portrait, a profile portrait of Leonardo, obviously in his older years. But the point is, this kid was like the ultimate secretary, fanboy, and dare I say, almost like son or heir. So it's like the total package, maybe sex, maybe not, but he certainly was all the other things. And that made him, that had to make him very precious and special to Leo for the reasons you just said, because all the other people are gone. All he's got is a pain in the ass, no pun intended, Salai, and now he's got his own young person that he can mold. It's better than having nothing. And he was probably very appreciative of this young man.
Yeah. Well, you know, we have to be grateful to Meltzy too, because it was... Yeah, Meltzy, who was the first person to collect all of Leonardo's notebooks together. And, you know, he sort of published them. The Codex Urbinus, as it's known, was created by Francesco Meltzy after Leonardo died. There's about 1,000 pages of notes and sketches under the title On Painting. It was known later as Leonardo's Treatise on Painting, the Trattato della Pittura. So he catalogued all of Leonardo's notebooks, manuscripts as they were, most likely had the intention to publish them, never got around to it. He died himself in 1570. But, you know, he was a good protector of Leonardo's work and heritage. And if it had been up to Salai,
He would have smoked him. He would have rolled him up and smoked him. Yeah,
stuck him up his butt. I mean, then smoked him. This is a good thing for us that Meltzy comes into the picture. Now, speaking of half-siblings, Leonardo did go back to Florence briefly in 1507. Why, Ray?
So Leo makes a trip back to Florence in August of 1507, but it had more to do with an inheritance dispute than worrying about whether the Signoria was pissed off because he's not painting the Battle of Anghiari. So it turns out that even though Leo did not get anything from his biological father, and I think we have to put it like that, he did have an uncle, Francesco da Vinci, that liked him very much, that doted on him when he was younger. He has a soft spot for Leo. And when this man dies, Uncle Fran, if I may, he has no children. He dies in early 1507. He leaves his estate to his beloved nephew, Leonardo, but the legitimate kids want that shit too. They assumed it would come to them, or maybe there was an understanding, oral or whatever. But so now Leo's got to go and fight for that. And again, I don't think it has to do with the money. I think it's the principle. I think he genuinely loved his uncle. His uncle loved him. He would visit him. He would go there and relax and paint. And now this one little patch of beloved property from a beloved uncle may be taken from him. I think for Leo, this is a hill too far, and he's ready to fight for it. So much so that he leaves Milan, the place that he loves, and he goes back to Florence. You know, we're at each other's throats. We're doing a good job of being mean to each other already, but you'd see something really ugly. It's gotten to the point now where it's just not worth it.
I could have said it better myself. I'm
saying this, but if you can move off my penis. That's still my best catchphrase. Why is that not on a coffee mug? I don't know. Or a vape. Something. I don't know. Something. Anyway.
So Piero's legitimate children believe they were going to get Francesco da Vinci's house. And yeah. They sued Leonardo for it, the cheeky bastards. Fuckers. They already got everything that dad left them. Now they want this as well. Yeah. So it's mostly a piece of farmland with two houses about 4 miles to the east of Vinci. And Leonardo had lent his uncle money over the years to improve the place.
Yeah.
He occasionally stayed there to do drawings and experiments. And in his notebooks, there are drafts of angry letters to his half-siblings written in the third person. You wished the utmost evil to Francesco. You do not wish to repay his heir the money he lent for the property. You have treated Leonardo not as a brother, but as a complete alien. Now, here's a lesson for you kids out there. Take a knee. Not that one. The other one. Yeah, that one. If you ever find yourself in a messy legal dispute.
Sure.
Which you will at some point in your life.
Yeah.
There's one thing that you should always do.
Right.
And that is to get a king to come to your aid. Now, I've had to do this on several occasions, and it helps that I had sex with the princess of, where is she? Belgium. Monaco, Belgium, before she was princess. Mary, where's she the princess of? I have so many princesses, I can't even keep track. But, okay, I didn't have sex with her. I tried.
But then I had an awesome wink thinking about what could have happened. Exactly, in the shower.
Yeah. And she worked for me briefly. The King of France came to Leonardo's aid, hoping to speed his return to Milan. He wrote to the Signoria of Florence, "We have been informed that our dear and much beloved Leonardo da Vinci, official painter and engineer, has some dispute and litigation pending in Florence against his brothers of a certain inheritances." He said, "Listen, we need him to be here with me and ask the Florentines to bring the said dispute and litigation to an end and see that the true justice is done with as little delay as possible. And you will give us a very agreeable pleasure by doing so."
Now, this was countersigned. Baguette. This was countersigned by the king's secretary. But I've got to think, if the king writes it and the king signs it, does anybody else really need to sign it? Okay, but but they're bringing the full weight of the French court and the Milanese court to this situation.
Now, surprisingly, the king's letter didn't help much. No.
Florence said, "Fuck you and fuck that letter."
Yeah. He already stole him from us, so he hasn't finished the painting. Right. Exactly. So Leonardo had to keep working his connections. This time, he has connections much closer to Florence. He composed a letter which was then scribed for him by Machiavelli's secretary, Agostino Vespucci.
Right.
To Cardinal Ippolito d'Este, the brother of Isabella d'Este and Beatrice. Now, you might say that Leonardo probably not really in the good books of the d'Este family.
Good point.
Thing is, he keeps refusing to paint a portrait of Isabella, coming up with excuses.
But
he is, he is respected, and maybe he promised to finish her fucking portrait if her brother, the cardinal, stepped in. Now, the cardinal was a friend of the judge in this case. The cardinal wrote a letter.
Good to have friends.
I entreat you as urgently as I know how. Oh, this is what Leonardo wrote to the cardinal. To write a letter to Sir Raffaello, who's the judge, in that skillful and affectionate manner which you know so well, recommending to him Leonardo Vincio, your lordship's most abject servant, requesting him and urging him not only to do me justice, but to do so with propitious urgency. So Leonardo finds out somebody he knows who's a friend of the judge. He's doing what all Italians have always done, is try and use your contacts to get out of get out of a bad legal judgment.
Massage the situation.
People don't know this. It doesn't get talked about often, but Leonardo da Vinci invented the mafia. Basically, he among the many things that he invented the mafia. He's the patron saint of the mafia because he had to get a judge to change his mind. You tell your judge friend that maybe if he does me this favor, you know, on the day of my daughter's wedding, that one day you will be able to ask me to have somebody whacked.
Exactly. But I mean, he's pulling all the strings because he's trapped. He's not happy with the situation. And again, it's a matter of principle. He did love his uncle very much. And this does kind of work out because Leo gets let's call it a partial victory. And as far as we can tell, even though all the details are not known, the settlement was pretty much his idea because I think there was a part of a letter, and this might have been in third person, Cam. I don't know if you know this or not, but so one part of the letter that he wrote is like, oh, why don't you let him, that is Leo, enjoy the property and its proceeds during his life as long as they return to your children, which is a good idea. He's in his 50s. Give him the place, and when he croaks, because that's coming soon, come on, then it can go back to those families. Fair is fair, right? Whatever. So however it happens, that seems to be what happened. And so Leo wins a partial victory, a moral victory, whatever you want to call it. But at the end of the day, the family will get the land and the two houses back in their house. So win-win, I guess.
Yeah, but the thing I don't get about this is Leonardo doesn't want to live near Florence. He's fucked off to Milan.
It's not the point.
He doesn't need it. He doesn't even need to use it. Like, he's not going to go and spend any time there. He never does, as far as I know.
Right. Well, how about this? Remember on the previous episode, we were talking about when he was making a note of his father's death, there were several mistakes or inconsistencies or whatever, which could suggest that he was emotionally distraught. And so maybe it's like, my father never took me into the family. He never spent much time with me after those three commissions, you know, whatever. And now he dies and he doesn't leave me anything. There's that. And then my half-brothers are treating me like I'm the plague. And now you want to take my uncle's land, who literally gave it to me on his death? That's a bridge too far. So I would like to think it's the principle of the idea, but who in the hell knows? Because there's a lot that we don't know. But I think for him, this was personal. And he just wanted to have some connection to some part of the family that he came from. Of course, that's just a guess.
Yeah, maybe. And he'd loaned his uncle money to fix the place.
Yeah, at least pay him that back. Fuck. Well,
but they don't. Something. That's the thing.
Exactly.
Like, and so if he has to go it, full sell it all the way. But if he'd owned the place, he could have sold it and recouped some of that money maybe. Anyway,
right.
He spent 8 months in Florence while all this is going on and really got nothing out of it at the end of the day. Yeah. But then he has to go back to Milan, but he's been away so long now that he's worried that the king might have replaced him, might be unhappy with him. Charles d'Amboise, the French governor of Milan, hadn't been replying to his letters. He'd been ghosting him. So he sent a message to the king via satellite. Gets him to deliver it. So Sally's still playing an important role here. The message said, I suspect that my feeble recognition of the great benefits I have received from your excellency may have made you annoyed with me. And for this reason, you have not answered the many letters I have addressed to you. I am now sending Sally to you to inform your excellency that I am almost at an end of my litigation with my brothers and hope to be in Milan this Easter.
Yeah. So if I pissed you off with my letter campaign, I'm sorry, but I hope to be back soon, and I won't be coming back empty-handed.
I shall bring with me two pictures of the Madonna, different in size, intended for the most Christian king or for anyone else that your lordship may choose. Now, I don't think that these are his paintings. And if they are, what are they and what happened to them? Maybe he just stole them from the farmhouse on his way out. Maybe they were somebody else's paintings.
Right. But he knows he's got to say something. He's got, you know, there's a little bit of a carrot of the letter. Now he's got to, excuse me, the stick, and he's got to come with the carrot. Like, and I'm going to bring back some Madonnas so you can keep them. You can give them out to friends. And you can either say these were done by Leonardo or these were given to me by Leonardo. And again, his name is out there. So, it's a big deal. But this is Leonardo we are talking about. He cannot leave well enough alone. So he's like, please, please let me come back. And what about the water rights the king had given me? Because that, like you said in a previous episode, that's how people made money. They had an income. So he's writing, he also says, I would like to know where I'm to have my living quarters when I return, as I wish no longer to incommode your excellency. And then he asked if the salary from the king would continue. And then he asks for the water right. So he's like, please don't be mad at me, but I don't want to live with you anymore. I don't want to live in the governor's palace. I want to make sure the king's still going to pay me regularly. And I want to know if I still get the money from the water rights. I mean, he's really pushing it here. He better hope the king loves him and is still enthralled with him, because he is really asking a lot from his highness.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a new boy toy. He doesn't want to be stupping him in the governor's palace. That's going to be awkward.
Yes,
he needs a place.
Where he ends up doesn't make it any better. But I see your point. I see your point.
He also reminded the king via Charles d'Amboise that he's not only a painter but also an engineer, and suggested he would make him some machines when he got back.
Oh yeah, some doohickeys.
Yeah, I'll make you some machines.
Yeah. It will give you great pleasure to our most Christian king. As in, you're a Christian, so you have to be nice to me, dick face. I'm translating.
So by April 1508, he's back in Milan. This time he is living in a parish church.
Yes.
As you say. A lot easier to stoop boys, because the priests were doing it. Everyone was stooping the boys.
They had rooms for it.
Stooping room, they would call it. He's still getting paid by the king.
Call the confessional.
His final payment from the Virgin on the Rocks also came in September. Both Sally and Melzi are with him.
Right.
Over the next decade, he would only return to Florence a couple of times for very brief personal visits, but would never work there again. Like Leonardo da Vinci, Florence's most famous son, the most famous artist of the Renaissance, spent the vast majority of his artistic career in Milan, not in Florence, because Florence didn't appreciate him.
They fucked up. You fucked up, Florence. You lost him. Lesson learned.
Yeah. Well, that is the end of that episode, I think. We will be back next time with a little thing called the Mona Lisa and the last few years of the life of the man, the legend, Ray Harris, and Leonardo da Vinci.
Two for the price of one.